they're only underrated because you guys don't talk about them.
Hmm. I think you're preaching, man. You're definitely.
I don't know if you feel the same way, but that's just how I feel being a fan of the Bucks.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to BCB. This is Casual Basketball. This is your host, Aaron Washington, coming back at you guys. We're simplifying the game a dollar at a time. You know how we do things at Business Casual. Glad to have you all back on for another recording, another episode. This is 139. We're going to be diving into the Jrue Holiday extension to start things off. And then later on, we're going to be discussing the Utah Jazz and their magical season. They're coming off a loss last night in overtime to the Phoenix Suns. But regardless, they're doing incredible things in the Western Conference. I wanted to take a look at how they're progressing and see if that might give them a better shot this year to get over that proverbial hump in the playoffs. To join me on the podcast here today is staff writer for Brew Hoop over at SB Nation. Guys, this is Andrew Goodman. This is his third year of covering this team, Milwaukee, for SB Nation. And I was telling him right before we jumped on, this is perfect timing because that's right when Milwaukee started their ascension. They got Budenholzer in there to kind of take reins off of Jason Kidd. And ever since, it's been a magical rise. 60 win seasons, back-to-back MVP awards for Giannis and the such. And now Jrue Holiday is in the fold to kind of give them an extra layer of interest, intrigue, and strength going into the stretch of the season into another postseason. So, Andrew, thanks for your time, man. Glad to have you on. Excited to talk Jrue Holiday, among other things. And, yeah, just have a fun conversation this evening.
Thank you. Very well said on your part. And, again, I just want to thank you for having me on to your show. Really appreciate
it. Sure thing, man. Glad to have you. So, Andrew, this is our time here to discuss the Milwaukee Bucks, discuss Jrue Holiday. I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on this. Holiday is kind of that third string, that third prong of the big-time players in Milwaukee, and that's really going to help them take a step forward to get over the playoff disappointments that have hit them in the past couple of years here. He signed a four-year, $160 million max deal. So that's 120% raise on his current 25% million base for this season. So quite a nice raise for him. The bonuses I've heard are going to carry over into his next deal. So it's going to be about $4 million in bonuses, likely bonuses going forward for him. I think that's each season. And he could have signed for more money, like almost $170 million, if he had waited until free agency with another team, or he could have signed for $228 for 5 years with the Bucks. So I think all things considered, this is a nice middle ground. It gets him locked in now before he hits free agency. He still gets a nice sum of money. And then he also gets a player option for that last year. So, Andrew, just wanted to hear your thoughts initially on this deal. Were the Bucks kind of all invested in this? Did they have to get this deal done now, considering what they gave up to get him in the first place in New Orleans?
Yeah, when you talk about the Jrue Holiday extension here, when you look at what Milwaukee gave up in the offseason to get him, you know, just a bevy of draft picks and draft capital and all that, it's kind of a no-brainer here that if you do sign him to a long-term deal to keep him in Milwaukee for a few years, this trade is a win regardless. And obviously, if he leaves Milwaukee in the offseason, then, you know, it's a head-scratcher and, you know, the Bucks gave away all that draft capital just for 1 year of Jrue Holiday. But here, when you look at what Jrue Holiday has done, not only on the court in his first season in a Bucks uniform, but what he and his family do off the court, this just shows the commitment that not only Jrue has to the Bucks, but what the Bucks franchise has in Jrue. And I think when you're looking at this extension, you might think, oh, wow, you know, that's a lot of money for a guy who, if you just look at his stats, like, well, it might be a little questionable. But for me, it's all about the fit. And Jrue Holiday's fit in Milwaukee is, you know, the way he has helped change, you know, the culture and how Milwaukee plays on both ends of the floor. This was just a no-brainer extension. And we know Jrue Holiday did miss some time earlier in the season due to a positive COVID test. And you know, that time he was out, just how poorly Milwaukee played defensively, you know, it just showed how important Jrue is to this team. And, you know, the Bucks didn't really struggle offensively without him. That's because, you know, they have number 34 and their offense isn't going to struggle when he's on the floor. But they just missed having Jrue, the leader, their anchor defensively, someone who could switch 1 through 5 defensively very successfully. Just, you know, having this commitment from Jrue, you know, he is in his 30s. But, you know, he's a guy that just doesn't show like he's slowing down. And I think this is some of the best basketball he has played in his entire career.
You really said it. And I wanted to go through some numbers. You know, you're mentioning that he's playing the best basketball of his career. It may be kind of hard to believe at first, but we have to consider that he's not carrying as big of a load as he did in New Orleans. When you have primary ball handlers like Chris Middleton and Giannis in the fold. He doesn't have to be as part of as many actions, and his usage therefore has gone down from years past. So he's down from last season being at about 26-27% usage to this season down at about 22%. So that definitely correlates with less touches. He's not finishing as many plays, but he's still very much involved in this team. And then, of course, as you mentioned, his impact goes beyond the offensive side of the ball. He's a key stopper for the primary offensive threats that the Milwaukee faces on a daily basis. And then you're looking at some other percentages like his two-point percentage and three-point percentage. Those are career highs. He's shooting the ball better than he has before. That's a credit to the gravity that Giannis and Chris Middleton demand on the court at any given time. And his assist percentage is up as well. So, that is a really a testament to the fact that not only is he more efficient, but he has always been a selfless player. He's willing to get other people involved. And a career high of his percentage, a career high of his shots specifically are assisted this year. So that's up at about 43%. So other guys are making plays for him, and then he reciprocates that by making plays for others. So definitely a great guy to have on this team. And, you know, when you put that into perspective, it makes you understand a little bit more as to why Milwaukee gave him this much money. Because you mentioned this as well, Andrew, that the per game stats are not going to tell that story. He's at about 17 points per game this season, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. Those are good, but they don't scream like almost max deal numbers. But you have to dig in deeper, and then that's where the value of Jrue Holiday starts to shine.
Right. And like you said, the efficiency this season has just been off the charts. And I think one of the most important aspects aside, we're talking just offensively. We all, you know, Jrue is an elite defender in the NBA. But since he came to Milwaukee, Mike Budenholzer, you know, had him playing in the dunker spot, which is basically operating on the baseline. This has opened up so many looks for, you know, Middleton and three-point shooters, DiVincenzo off a catch and shoot. So just having Jrue Holiday, adding that new wrinkle to the offense, absolutely no disrespect to Eric Bledsoe and his tenure in Milwaukee. You know, he was a solid regular season for the Bucks, but we all knew what the case was come postseason time. You know, Eric Bledsoe would fold. It was just very easy to get him out of a rhythm. But now you have a proven playoff stud in Jrue Holiday. Granted, if he can stay on the floor, we know about his documented past with injuries. But, you know, just how much gravity he, you know, demands offensively because, you know, he's a great finisher around the rim. He's very strong. I think his strength is very underrated. Great three-point shooter, catch and shoot off the dribble. I also think his step back is one of the most lethal step backs in the game. It's just super subtle. You know, he just lulls the defender to sleep, and it's like he just makes these little steps and he creates so much space on the perimeter. But yeah, like I said, this dunker spot on the baseline, his vision is off the charts. We see it every game. He's making these one-handed whip passes to the corner on top of the arc to, you know, Brook Lopez or Middleton, and, you know, just creates so much open opportunities. And, you know, the Bucks are just loaded with three-point shooters with the addition of Bryn Forbes as well. And, you know, Bobby Portis is having a great season, you know, shooting the ball overall and from deep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's really underrated when you're talking about his passing. Like, nobody really talks about that. We talk about his ability to use his frame to get inside, his efficiency improvements, and then, of course, his defense. So that's a great point on his playmaking. And, you know, the film and the stats really back that up. You know, when both sides of the coin really come together to show what he can do as far as being like a secondary playmaker for this team, it's really incredible. And I went to cleaning the glass earlier to look at his breakdown by position. And this season, he's actually playing more point guard than in years past. So, I mean, he's still a combo guard, but they were saying that 2/3 of his minutes come at the one as opposed to the two. So you would think that he would be involved in more actions, but it's a little bit deceiving because technically he's the one. But as you know, Andrew, like, Giannis does bring the ball down a good bit. He does begin some of these actions because he's a very gifted ball handler and passer for his size. And then, of course, Chris Middleton does that as well. So it's kind of like by committee as far as like who handles the ball. But the great thing about him, and especially like Chris Middleton, is like they're so diverse and adaptable when it comes to what they do on offense. So they can both be off ball. They can both be on ball. They can both spot up. They can both create their own shot inside and out. It's really just incredible like how the pieces fit together. And I think that's what's going to give them that added layer of security when it comes time for the postseason. So, you know, teams like Miami or Toronto in the past won't be able to easily shut them down, because if you're forming a wall against Giannis, that's going to leave you vulnerable in other places. And I'm sure that with something else we talked about before we went on the air was Mike Budenholzer and the coaching staff's willingness to try out new things in this regular season. So they might be sacrificing a few regular season wins. Like, they're not at the one seed. They're probably not going to finish number one in the conference, but they would gladly give that up to perform better in the postseason. And I think that's going to show itself when we're talking about how people like Giannis finishes games. I think you're going to see Giannis operate more as like a pick and roll player in that dunker spot. And you mentioned earlier, plays like that, that give Holiday and then Middleton the chance to close games for them. And it should allow them to be a lot more efficient, because they're going to be harder to stop, because you can't just go under screens on them and force guys like them to shoot, because they'll kill you all day.
Right, exactly. You know, you really hit the nail on the head. And, you know, you have Jrue Holiday. He's not a guy you can leave open. So it, just having the addition of Jrue Holiday, it's like you said, it's almost going to be, it's not impossible, but to form a wall against the Bucks, it's, you're going to have to pick your poison. So you're either going to have Middleton open on the perimeter. Brook Lopez is also having a nice year, a rebound year shooting the basketball from deep. So that's the blessing of adding Jrue Holiday, is just how many new wrinkles the Bucks have experimented with. And I'm going to give credit to the coaching staff and Mike Budenholzer. We saw the Milwaukee Bucks the last two seasons just absolutely run through the regular season. And, you know, they look like the team to beat, but then come playoff time, you know, it's just, they lose the same way over and over again. Just, they had that drop coverage, which was just leaving opposing shooters open, you know, basically getting whatever they wanted. But now you have Jrue Holiday, someone who can switch, sort of Eric Name, who covers the Milwaukee Bucks for The Athletic, had a great piece earlier this season. And he basically, I'm paraphrasing here, basically said that Jrue Holiday, you know, was very vocal about, you know, advocating for the Milwaukee Bucks to start switching defensively. And now when you also add the acquisition of PJ Tucker, granted, I know PJ Tucker is probably having the worst year of his career. He is also up there in age, but adding a guy like PJ Tucker, you can now stagger him with Brook Lopez. As we know, Brook Lopez might be one of the slowest players in the NBA. And if you can't really switch effectively with a guy like Brook Lopez on the floor, just because, you know, he is slow. His rim protection is still very good, but just having a guy like PJ Tucker off the bench just to stagger, you know, 15 to 20 minutes with Brook Lopez just, you know, opens up so many defensive possibilities for the Bucks. And when you look at Milwaukee's closing lineup here, they usually go with a combination of like Jrue Holiday, DiVincenzo, Middleton, Connaughton, and Giannis. So you're going to be looking at that, and you might be able to replace Connaughton with PJ Tucker. Granted, PJ Tucker is hurt at the moment with the calf strain. It's
right.
Unclear when he's going to return. Mike Budenholzer says he's getting closer. You know how coaches are with injuries. Yeah, so his return is, you know, who knows? Your guess is as good as mine, but you know, just having a guy like Jrue Holiday being vocal about switching, and it's just opened up so many possibilities for the Bucks. And like you said, totally fine with the Bucks dropping these games in the regular season if they are experimenting. You know, they're trying new things. And if you're losing, trying new things, fine in my book, instead of losing just the same way over and over, just the redundancy.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it. Exactly. And as far as it goes in the standings, they're about six games ahead of the next closest team, which is Atlanta as of this recording. So it's not like they're going to lose any ground in the standings if they lose a few more games. The cushion, the safety net is already there, so they can afford to drop a little bit, slip a little bit. As long as they're top three, which they are pretty much guaranteed at this point, then they're going to be all good for the postseason. You know, Andrew, we've been talking about Jrue Holiday's offense, and we know about his defense, but one key number or stat that I found on Cleaning the Glass as well that really just goes to demonstrate the effect of his defense, not just this season, but for his whole career. So if we're going back through the last 10 years of his career, we're looking at how teams perform on the court versus when he's off the court defensively. Teams allow, except for if we exclude the first two seasons of his career, all the other years of his career, teams perform better with him on the court defensively. So that's really just a testament to what he brings to a team as far as his toughness, his versatility, just his IQ on that end. And it comes out to about minus 3.7 points allowed per 100 possessions. So I think that's this year's numbers, but it's a negative number for every season except for his rookie and sophomore year. So just really incredible as far as what Jrue Holiday does for a team defensively. And I wish I had the numbers of how they performed defensively when he was out compared to when he was in, but suffice to say, I'm sure it was much worse. And you touched on that earlier. And that's part of the reason why they went through some of their losing streaks. And all in all, it has been an up and down season for Milwaukee, but it's generally been positive because we keep talking about what Holiday brings to this team. And I think they're gelling at just the right time now, even though they've had winning streaks and losing streaks. It's all going to come together, I think, at the right time. They just want to make sure they're healthy, like PJ Tucker is back, and they're gelling when it comes time for the playoffs. But if we turn our attention to where the money has been invested on this team, that's worth a discussion as well, because this lineup isn't cheap. It's going to be something that weighs down on their books for several years. And if you add in Holiday's deal for next season, even if they renounce all cap holds besides, you know, those three guys, you know, except for the guys that are already guaranteed, then they have $130 million committed in salary next season. The luxury tax is 136. So they're already pushing you up against the tax just for guys that are guaranteed. So I think that you add in like these three guys, as far, you know, adding some of those younger players that are still on the rookie contracts. I mean, they're already up against the tax. So that's going to force them to make some difficult decisions. Like Portis and Forbes, I believe, have player options for their next season. PJ Tucker is going to be a free agent. So it calls into question some of the moves they're going to try to make around the margins. I think John Hollinger at The Athletic addressed this in his last article, where it's like a cap geekery section. And he really addressed this as to what Milwaukee is going to have to do in the future as far as their books go. So definitely something to keep an eye on. And then another tidbit that I found is that they're trying to duck the luxury tax this season because the repeater penalty is a real thing and it's going to come into play once we get into the next few years of this deal. So any thoughts on their financial commitments to these guys? I know it's definitely necessary and it's going to be worth it, especially if they win a championship, but just want to acknowledge that because it is going to make them have to be a little more creative on how they build a supporting cast around those three core characters in the following years.
You know, all I'm going to say is if you can't win a championship with Giannis in his prime, Middleton and Jrue Holiday, probably not going to win a championship. And for me, for the Bucks to, you know, shell out this money for players that are worth, you know, totally fine with that. But like you said, Bryn Forbes and Bobby Portis are, you know, just playing astronomically above what their contract is worth. So when you look at that, two key contributors who are going to probably command more money in the offseason if they do opt out of their contract, then you're going to be looking at, well, you know, we're going to have to let one or two of these players go. But like you said, it'll be worth it if the Milwaukee Bucks do come back and win the title this season. Then, hey, if they do win the title, maybe Bobby Portis and both Bryn Forbes are, you know, inclined to opt into their contract or, you know, restructure the deal, take some sort of a pay cut. But, you know, like I said, if, you know, I don't mind having all this money, of course, tied up to Giannis, Middleton, and Jrue Holiday, proven elite basketball players in the NBA. And for me, you know, many people feel differently about draft picks and draft capital. But for me, if you're a contending team and you have, you know, transcendent player, Giannis Antetokounmpo, someone who, you know, you don't find everywhere and is a once in a lifetime type player, you know, you're going to have to be flexible with your money and you're going to have to be wise with it. And I think going out and getting guys like Portis and Bryn Forbes just, you know, raises the ceiling of this Bucks team tremendously, because we've seen in years past, the Bucks are bringing Sterling Brown off the bench, who really isn't that great of a basketball player, plays hard, but, you know, on a contending team, can he really be getting minutes? Kyle Korver was, you know, a key contributor. Like, no disrespect to Kyle Korver, one of the best shooters in NBA history. Sure. But if you're having him being a key contributor on a contending team, you know, that's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah, good points all around, man. And it really just this is where the front office is really going to have to be a little more creative. This is where Houston really made its mark the last few years of the Harden era there. You know, Brooklyn's kind of walking this tightrope. Golden State, they're having to get creative because they're hitting luxury tax penalties, the repeater tax. So, yeah, for Milwaukee, I mean, this season is going to be expensive, but it's not really this season where they're going to have to really make some decisions. It's the next coming years.
Right.
So DiVincenzo has another deal under his rookie contract for next season. And then, you know, the extension talks for him are going to become a talking point. So we'll see if the Bucks decide to extend him prior to hitting free agency and then what goes on after that. And then Connaughton is also on the books. You know, that's kind of like a weird situation because I don't know if they really planned on signing Connaughton like that prior to the season. You know, they planned on getting Bogdanovich and going another route, but I want to say they actually like had to restructure Connaughton's deal. I'm not sure if you can shed any more light on that, but I think something tricky, a little bit, something weird happened at the beginning of the season. I can't remember how it happened, but if you remember, then
very, very odd situation. You know, with how poorly Connaughton played last year, it was sort of like, you know, Bucks fans were like, you know, why are we bringing him back? But yeah. So in the offseason, they signed Pat Connaughton. They had to restructure his deal, and they ended up giving, you know, it wouldn't be a John Horst deal if he didn't give his players and player option after year number two. Yeah. John Horst is just notorious for giving guys player options. But I just want to go back to my point about the draft capital and all that. If you're a contending team, for me, like, no, like I said before, many people have different opinions on this. For me, if you have a guy like Giannis, first round picks aren't going to matter.
Right.
Because if you have Giannis, odds are you're going to be contending for a championship team. And for championship teams, do first round picks really carry much weight, specifically in the NBA? In my opinion, not really. But back to Connaughton. Yeah, that was a super weird situation, having to restructure his deal. I think he's making somewhere in the ballpark around $5 million per season. That sounds about right. He does have a player option after year two, I believe. So that was what the restructuring was about. But, you know, I don't really have many complaints about Pat Connaughton this season. He did start off, you know, playing pretty poorly defensively. He has shot the ball consistently this season, but I do believe Pat Connaughton is a guy that has earned his role in crunch time. He's not playing in every fourth quarter. You know, it depends on the matchup, who the Bucks are playing, you know, what the game flow is. Right. But I think Pat Connaughton has, you know, opened up a little bit more for the Bucks offensively. You know, he's one of the more athletic guys in the NBA in terms of, like, you know, speed, and his vertical is insane.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, you know, he can switch effectively. You know, he's not a lockdown defender, but, you know, he's a guy that you have on the floor, you're going to be able to switch him. And I know you were talking about DiVincenzo's contract. He has one more year in his rookie season. That's another thing. You know, the Bucks are obviously very high on DiVincenzo, but in my opinion, I don't really view DiVincenzo as a cornerstone guy. I think he can be a very solid contributor in the NBA. But for me, you know, if I'm the Bucks GM, really not sure. You know, granted, there are role players who don't even play who are making like crazy $15 million a year. So granted, I hope DiVincenzo has a great agent. But if I'm the Bucks, I'm really not comfortable, you know, going over $12 million, and I'm not even sure they can really afford anything more than that. So if you're looking at a guy like DiVincenzo, for him, it's going to be like, okay, are you going to be chasing a ring, or are you going to be, you know, chasing paper? Which, you know, obviously I have no problem with a guy chasing paper. Every player should do that.
Get the check, man. Get the check. Absolutely. That's the wrong thing to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I get that. And yeah, I mean, when it comes down to its extension, yeah, the team is definitely going to be hesitant. I'm sure they're going to have a number in mind that they don't want to exceed. They will have the benefit of those bird rights, of course, so they'll be able to re-sign him for whatever they feel comfortable with. But of course, that's going to have tax implications, so I'm sure they're going to be a little bit hesitant to give him anything crazy. But that's kind of where all this is going to fit in. Like, do they try to get somebody that's underrated, they feel, in their opinion, somebody that has a lot to prove, that can come in and fill his spot, and ensuing free agency periods, trades, things like that? That's all going to be interesting to keep an eye on. And then you mentioned how first round picks are not important. That is completely true. They have barely any first round picks left for the next several years. They have some pick swaps in 24 and 26, nothing in 23 and 25 or 27. So the chips are in, man. This is the time for the team to really step up and make their mark. And I have high hopes for them. I think this year is going to be different for them. And the competition is as stiff as ever with those two teams ahead of them in the standings. But if they play their cards right and they can utilize Giannis properly, so he's not a non-factor like we saw last postseason, I think they have a great shot to break out of the East and make the finals. So definitely be a great story for a franchise in a small market like Milwaukee that hasn't seen such success as far as the championship goes in several decades. So I think the extension was a great move, and it's another step on their path to becoming a championship team, you know?
And really all I know as a Bucks fan is pain. You know, it's just pain, 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 pain. But now, you know, you watch this Bucks team, which I believe is totally different than prior seasons. You know, last 2 years, like I said, just absolute regular season juggernaut, you know, just totally flop in the playoffs. But if you just look at how this team, like how close each guy is with one another, you can kind of tell that every man on this roster is bought in. Whenever they're in the game, they play hard. And, you know, Jrue Holiday is a guy who plays a very integral role in all this. So, you know, very thankful that the Bucks actually went out and made the move for Jrue Holiday. Granted, they were about to ship DiVincenzo to Sacramento for Bogdanovich, and really still not very clear to me what had happened. But I think when you're looking at the Bucks this season, I think they're kind of thankful with how things are playing out that, you know, that wasn't the case, that DiVincenzo ended up in Sacramento and he's still in the Bucks uniform.
Yeah, everything happens for a reason, man. And I think they're happy with how things are going, regardless of how that deal played out. So we'll keep an eye on Milwaukee and see how their season goes. But if we're talking about incredible seasons, we cannot leave off the Utah Jazz, man. I mean, they've been, you know, incredible in the Western Conference. So they're having a season like we saw from Milwaukee the past 2 years, where they're at the top of the conference. They are destroying the competition. The numbers are insane. You know, their point differential is off the charts right now. And I went back and I looked at some numbers here for the Utah Jazz to try to put this in perspective. So after last night, they're at about 38-13 as far as the record goes. Phoenix is creeping up on them in the standings. But, you know, it's going to be definitely interesting to watch those two teams go back and forth for the number one spot. But for Utah this season, this is their best winning percentage, 74.5% since 97-98, which is that season. Of course, they went to the finals, lost to the Bulls. They had a 75% win percentage. So this is the best Jazz basketball in a long time. And I'm sure that, you know, us as fans, you know, just kind of spectators are not taking this, you know, we're not going to take this for granted. I'm sure their fans are not. So some of the numbers that are making this possible is their three-point percentage and attempts. So they're at about 43 threes a game, but they're also fourth in percentage at 39%. They're also first in rebounds. So I think they're going to credit Rudy Gobert for that as well. And they're also 30th in two-point attempts. So they just do not believe in two-pointers. They're all in on the threes. They hit a lot of their threes. So that puts them first in offensive rating as far as cleaning the glass goes, and then second. And then if we go back to the past 2 weeks, they're almost first in both of those categories. So just wanted to shed some light on their incredible season. And even though they lost last night, they're on a magical run. A lot of their players are having career years, Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Jordan Clarkson, and they've all bought in, similar to Milwaukee's guys, that they believe in the system, they believe in each other, and it's really just contributing to an incredible season. So initial thoughts on the Jazz. I know this isn't the team you cover, but you know, they're pretty incredible in the West. Anything stand out to you as far as Utah goes?
You know, I'm just going to say that I'm very thankful that the Utah Jazz are in the Western Conference, because whenever they play the Milwaukee Bucks, they always just, they wreck them. You know, like you said, Quinn Snyder just has his finger on the pulse of that team. He's a great coach, NBA coach, and it's clear that, or so, like the Bucks, that they all play for each other and everyone is bought in. And when you're talking about Utah's ascension this season, I think Donovan Mitchell's evolution as a playmaker has really opened up the doors for so many avenues offensively for the Jazz. You know, just some of these passes he's making are just incredible. You know, he does sometimes struggle with, you know, high volume. He'll score like 30 points, but he'll need 24 shots to do that. But I also think he's great at getting to the foul line, just creating contact. As we know, he's one of the more explosive finishers around the rim in the NBA. But for me, another big reason for their success is the emergence of Jordan Clarkson. As we know, Jordan Clarkson was arguably one of the worst players in basketball in the finals a few years ago in a Cleveland uniform.
Oh, yeah.
So just, you know, to see him bounce back, he had a few tough seasons in a Laker uniform as well. I think just a culmination of Clarkson's offensive game, like how well he fits, and Donovan Mitchell's playmaking, just, you know, it's been great. As we know, Rudy Gobert is always going to be, you know, stout defensively, and, you know, good teams rebound. So it's not surprising that Utah is one of the best teams in the NBA, not only because they shoot the three-point ball well, but, you know, they take care of business on the glass. And we see teams who get killed on the glass are usually the teams that don't do very well in the NBA.
Exactly. You know, those are great points. And focusing in on Donovan Mitchell specifically, you mentioned his playmaking improvements. That's definitely impressive. And what that tells me is that he's not having a career year as far as like points per game or, anything like that. I mean, his assists per game are not even up by that much, but his percentages are up. So his 2-point percentage is down a little bit, but his 3-point percentage is up to about 40%. And what that tells me also is, going back to last season, that's not a fluke. So last season he was at about 38%. So it's sustained. You know, this is not a flash in the pan. This isn't something that's just going to happen and kind of dissipate. He's really taken pride in the fact that he can be an elite jump shooter from three and then kind of keep the defense honest, because, as you said, he's an incredible athlete. So if he gets into the lane, he has great footwork. So he utilizes his athleticism very well. Euro steps are pretty incredible from him. Off-foot layups. I mean, he's very creative around the rim. So that gives Utah this dimension that's really incredible. And while we're talking about that backcourt, we can't do this without giving credit to Mike Conley, who came in last season.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he really struggled. He said it himself. You know, he was at about – he was shooting under 40% from the field and 36% from three last season in the first 5 months. He turned it on in the bubble and in the postseason. And now – you know, this season he's sixth in the league, or this is at the time of this article I read by 538 over there. Mm-hmm. But he was plus 4.7 as far as a net rating goes. So that is sixth in the league. We're talking about defense, and then offense is at about plus 3.1. So the advanced numbers shine very favorably upon him. He's back to being an incredible defensive player, especially for his size. His shooting is accurate. So he's found his place in this offense because he had to get used to having more ball handlers on the court, unlike the situation he had in Memphis. So now that he's adapted, now that the shooters are firing away, Joe Ingles, Bogdanovich, it makes him almost unstoppable at times. Only the most elite teams, kind of like we saw from Phoenix last night, really have a chance, because you have to match up with them inside with Gobert, outside with Conley and Mitchell, around the margins with the wing players. So that's what makes them so formidable. So they've really invested in this core. They've bet on a lot of players to be better than we've seen before, and it's all paying off for them. So it's a convergence of a lot of factors, and we'll see if it sustains in the postseason. But if any of this is sustainable, they have a great shot at taking a run to the finals, because they've been the best team in the league so far this season, and I don't really think that's debatable.
Right, and Mike Conley is a guy who's played in big games his whole career. We saw it back at Ohio State when he was paired up with Greg Oden. That Ohio State team was so much fun to watch.
Feels but like he's played so long ago now.
Yeah, right. I know, we're getting old.
Yeah,
but yeah. He's also, when he was in the Memphis Grizzlies, that grit grind Memphis Grizzlies team with Tony Allen and Marc Gasol. Mike Conley's been there. He's played in huge playoff games throughout his career, and I think that is going to help sort of get Utah over this hump, because you have this playoff ready guy in Mike Conley. He's mentally tough. You know, he's great locker room presence. He's been there. And also, you know, have to give credit, like you said, Bogdanovich and Ingles are super reliable from 3-point land. And I also think Joe Ingles is great as a playmaker. He and Gobert also run a really nice 2-man game. But I also really enjoy Royce O'Neal's game. He's a guy who does not have to score to impact the game. And, you know, he's regarded as one of the better perimeter defenders. So when you look at Utah's team, it's all coming together. We saw him struggle last year in the bubble, but you know, I believe COVID just really hampered a lot of teams. I don't really like using that as an excuse, but it, you know, it's the reality. You can't go from playing elite basketball, taking, what was it, 4 months off, and then expect to just, you know, pick up like it's nothing. So, yeah. You know, when you look at this Utah team, just super enjoyable to watch, and they just have so many likable guys on their team.
They really do. They all work seamlessly together. And the great thing about their team is they have so many different pieces that they can kind of call upon, and then it allows them to have kind of like a safety net. So if somebody's having an off night, odds are somebody else is there to pick up the slack. So if Donovan Mitchell is off, hey, Jordan Clarkson is a super sub, he can come in and pick up the slack. If Joe Ingles is having a tough time turning the ball over, hey, Mike Conley is there to right the ship. Bogdanovich can create shots out of nothing. He's really incredible. You touched on Royce O'Neal. I have a soft spot for him. I wrote a piece on him. I think it was last January, I want to say, when they were on this crazy win streak. I touched on his importance to the team and how he's underrated. I still think he's underrated because nobody really talks about him, but that's the beauty of a guy like Royce O'Neal. He doesn't command the ball. He doesn't command attention on spotlight. He just makes things happen around the margins, just being a grit player, getting boards, matching up with some of the better offensive players in the other team. And This is really an incredible season for Utah because they finally found that balance between offense and defense. I think previously their problem was, if we go back like 2 or 3 years ago, it was the offense wasn't there. If we go back to last season, they trended too far in the other direction. Their defense fell off. We didn't really see the traditional Utah defense. This season, they found a mix of both. So now they're literally one of the best teams on both ends. And that's really a special combination. And metrics like that view a team like that favorably. And if you go around the league, you look at these different prediction algorithms, they're all going to give Utah a really great chance to win the title. I'd say at least 15 to 20% based on their recent postseason appearances, the experience, the raw numbers, everything like that. They have a great shot. So Gobert specifically is a guy I wanted to talk about because he's been in the mix for Defensive Player of the Year every year. And this season might not be any different. So do you feel like he is back in the mix for Defensive Player of the Year? Does he have an edge over guys like Miles Turner? Bam has been mentioned, Ben Simmons. Would you put him back right there around the top spot? Like, I mean, with team numbers like this, I feel like it's almost impossible to leave him off any kind of Defensive Player of the Year list. He's just been incredible once again.
Yeah, no, great points you just made. And Rudy Gobert, I think you have to have him as, you know, top two Defensive Player of the Year. You can honestly do that any season. I'd be totally okay with it. It's just the way, you know, he commands so much attention in the paint. You know, teams don't even think twice. They think twice about taking the ball into the paint, and teams are discouraged from going into the paint because of Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. And something else about Utah, which makes them super dangerous, is they have one of the best home court advantages in the league. And I'm not sure if they're going to have full capacity during the postseason or what, you know, their crowd numbers are going to look like. But number one, when you add in the altitude, we know, like we've seen so many years prior, just teams just go to Utah. They just go to die in Utah. I think Utah is one of the toughest, if not the toughest, places to win. So when you put all these factors together, Gobert playing, you know, elite defense like he always does, Royce O'Neal contributing defensively as well. He, you know, locks down on the perimeter, doesn't need a score to contribute. And then you have guys taking care of business offensively, Jordan Clarkson coming off the bench being a microwave scorer, Donovan Mitchell hitting almost 40% threes, Ingles, you know, great corner three-point shooter. I think this could be the year for Utah. And we know, like you mentioned, they did lose to Phoenix. Phoenix is having, you know, Cinderella season, you know, one of the more likable, you know, teams. When you look at, you know, I like Chris Paul a lot. I know many NBA fans think they have different opinions about him, but, you know, I just love seeing Phoenix, especially when, you know, what Monty Williams has been through. But going back to Utah, I think this really is Utah's shot. This team is right there with one of the best teams they've had, for sure. And they've had a lot of really good NBA teams.
Oh, they have. And if we're talking about Utah this season, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up past seasons for this team as well. Because when we talk about franchises in the NBA and how good they've been over time, a lot of times we like to glorify teams that have had smaller runs. Like we talk about the Warriors' recent run, about 5-year run. We like to talk about the Bulls when they had that 6-plus-year run where they had, you know, Jordan and they were winning championships. But we don't give enough credit to like the Indiana Pacers of the world, the Utah Jazz teams of the world. Do they have championships? Unfortunately not. But what they do have is longevity and they have consistency. So you go back in to look at, you know, winning percentages over the past 20 years, you might find three losing seasons. Houston's another team. Again, hasn't won a championship in quite some time since 95. But it's like they're almost never bad. Like they're at least good, if not great, every year. So you add that in, and it's like another layer of respect that we have to give to Utah. So credit to the front office. They don't take long to kind of rebuild this team.
Yep.
And they bounced back from the Gordon Hayward departure extremely well. So that's just insane, especially for a market that's not in LA, it's not in Miami, it's not in Chicago. They play their pieces extremely well.
And I'm going to go off on a little rant here. I think part of the problem with, you know, social media today is all these, you know, like ESPN House of Highlights, they only want to see LeBron, Anthony Davis, you know, Victor Oladipo's now in Miami. So, of course, you know, social media is fawning over, you know, Victor Oladipo, who's, you know, not even close to what he was, you know, prior to that catastrophic injury he suffered with the Pacers a few years ago.
Right.
So that's my biggest issue with how basketball is covered today. Is you have these smaller markets who doesn't really matter how well they play. They're just always going to be swept under the rug. And You know, you can't call, I hate when, you know, national writers and pundits, they say a team is underrated. Well, they're only underrated because you guys don't talk about them.
I think you're preaching, man. You're definitely.
I don't know if you feel the same way, but that's just how I feel being a fan of the Bucks. Like,
I totally agree.
Just these small markets is always, you know, are just an afterthought, no matter how well they play. They really have to win a championship in order to, you know, be talked about, which I think is really what's wrong with, you know, how the NBA is covered, you know, as a whole.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that reminds me of something I saw just the other day. I saved this quote by Neil Olshey, GM of the Portland Trail Blazers. I had this on my phone from 3 years ago, but he was talking about how we have to really enjoy the journey of these teams. Only one championship to go around every year, but there are plenty of teams that are very exciting, very well coached. They work together extremely well. Sometimes when they don't win, it may just be a product of circumstance. It doesn't mean that maybe that team wasn't good enough or that team was lacking severely. It just wasn't meant to be for that team. But it's like, you know, if we're not enjoying the process, we're not enjoying growth, we're not enjoying sustainability and things like that, then like, what's really the point? What are we doing here as fans, as sports fans? So I think that quote rings more true now than ever, because we're just not glorifying these teams like Utah enough for when they have seasons like this, where it's like, will they win a championship? Maybe not. Maybe they lose to the Lakers or something, but it's still incredible what they've done this year and almost, you know, for the last 20 or 30 years, because they're almost never bad. They always find a way to be competitive. So no, you're totally right on that point, man. I'm 100% agreement. And that's just the way social media goes. The top names get first dibs, but hopefully that changes a little bit. And guys, maybe like Donovan Mitchell at least, or Gobert can get a little more shine, because they deserve it, you know?
No, absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
So one last thing to look at for Utah, like how they match up with the teams they're competing against for the sake of playoff matchups. So we have to look at the LA teams. We have to look at Phoenix, who they just played last night. You know, we have to even look at maybe like a Portland as a team that could give them a little bit of trouble. The conference is very deep. So as good as they've been, this is not going to be easy whatsoever when it comes to the postseason. So starting with the Lakers, if they're fully healthy, man, I don't know if they can really beat that team. You know, when you have transcendent stars, there's not a whole lot you can do when it comes to defending them or continue to play the way you do. And the Lakers are still one of the best defensive teams, even without those two guys. So I just wonder how they're going to operate. And I think Gobert might be an extreme disadvantage if they go small with Anthony Davis at the five. How do you feel about that matchup?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the biggest concern for Utah's, you know, matchup against a Laker team. You know, LeBron and AD are out. They're falling in the standings. So what if they do, you know, somehow get that 8 seed from the playing game and match up with Utah? That's got to be like worst case scenario.
He's still disheartening, man.
Right. You know, you have all the success, you know, regular season success, one of the best, you know, teams in, you know, regular season franchise history. Oh, you know, you're going to be matched up with a healthy AD and LeBron. But for me, biggest question, can AD stay healthy? AD is probably one of the most injury prone players in basketball. You know, it just seems like every time he shoots, he falls to the ground. It's just not safe. So I think for me, it's not a question about, you know, if LeBron's going to be healthy. LeBron was built in some laboratory, okay? Like he's just different. For me, it's like AD, you know, it's just anything can go wrong with AD has gone wrong, which sucks because AD is one of the best players in the NBA, has, you know, all the talent in the world, the length. Yeah. But for me, when you're talking about teams that could give Utah some problems, is, you know, now I'm looking at the Denver Nuggets as serious contenders. I thought they were, you know, contenders. But now, you know, I think they're at like legit contenders when you look at how Aaron Gordon has played. You know, Aaron Gordon's not a guy that's going to, you know, propel you to a championship. But when you're looking at the fit and how well he has fit in alongside Nikola Jokic, it's, you know, it's all about fit. And this is, you know, going back to Jrue Holiday, this is why the Bucks shelled out all this money for Jrue Holiday, is because it's just such a great fit. And you're seeing it, you know, in the week that AG has been in Denver. I think when Aaron Gordon's on the floor, they have like a plus 61 plus minus, which is just absurd. Plus minus is not my favorite stat, but it definitely matches the eye test with how well, you know, Denver's always been a great offensive team, but now you have a guy like Aaron Gordon, who's been playing really well defensively, I think that team is very dangerous now.
Haven't lost since they acquired him, 6-0, I believe at this time. So, gosh, like I didn't even mention him in the first sentence, and you know they definitely do deserve mentioning because they look extremely strong. So I mean, how about that for a rematch, for a bubble rematch, mm-hmm. Denver and Utah? Like I'd pay a lot of money to see that again. So
I'm here for it.
I'm all here for it, man. The Clippers are also an interesting case if they go up against them in a playoff series. That would be very interesting because, you know, see with Utah, it's like they have this elite defensive presence in mm-hmm. the paint. Royce O'Neal is a great defensive player. How does that match up against the two wings in LA? You know, Kawhi and Paul George have had their ups and downs, mm-hmm. but in their last game where Paul was feeling good, Kawhi was his old self. I think they both had 20 plus points. Like that is a nightmare for any team to face. So they are a little bit more vulnerable. I believe mm-hmm. their defense has been a little bit lacking this season, although their offense has been incredible. Extremely good jump shooting team. They could probably match up extremely well with Utah when it comes to like just shooting the ball.
Right.
But their defense is a little bit weaker than we've seen. But I mean, if they're fully healthy, they still have Patrick Beverley and those guys. And I think if they play Zubac, they're still a really good defensive lineup. So that's worth keeping an eye on too. I think just with the state of the Western Conference, the matches could be anything because the mm-hmm. top 4, 5, and 6 are shifting. So we could get we could get this matchup in the first round. We could get the Lakers in the first round. There's just no telling at this point. So, I mean, either the LA matchups would be extremely exciting for a multitude of reasons.
You know, when you talk about the Clippers, for me, it's like you have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, which, you know, you have two top 20 players. You know, Paul George, obviously Kawhi Leonard is, you know, top 10 player in the NBA. You know, it's just odd that they have those two guys, and the rest of their roster, in my opinion, is just meh. You know, it's just kind of like, okay, we got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, so, you know, we're chilling. I think they're also relying a lot on Rondo. You know, we saw his postseason resilience with the Lakers last season in the bubble. But yeah. For me, I'm not so sure if I'm confident as a Clipper fan, because we saw when Paul George was in Oklahoma City a few years ago in the playoffs, just got owned Dude. By Joe Ingles. I'm pretty sure Paul George still has nightmares of Joe Ingles.
I'm sure he does. Way off P, pandemic P, like whatever you want, however you want to describe it, wasn't good. And I think the names are going to follow him. Like, I guarantee you, there's going to be at least one playoff game this coming postseason mm-hmm. where he shoots 2 for 12 or like 5 for 18 or something. And you're going to see one of those names trending on Twitter. I guarantee
oh, absolutely.
You. Something P. Yeah, just like insert name here P. Like, something is going to be on there. Like, I'll call it right now. They're going to jump on his back and when he right. has a bad playoff game, because it's just.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. But all I was going to say was, you know, I'm not worried about Kawhi Leonard. We know Kawhi Leonard is one of the best two-way players in all of basketball. Just such an amazing talent. But for me, it's, you know, is Paul George going to show up? You know, which version of Paul George are you going to get? Are you going to get the two-way stud, or are you going to get the guy who's just, you know, packs it in the playoffs and is just going to be shooting 5 for 15, 5 for 20 every game? So that's – they're relying a lot on Paul George, and really no knock on Paul George. He has a lot of talent. He's very, very great at this basketball game.
Oh, yeah.
But is he – what version of Paul George are they going to get in the playoffs?
In the playoffs, man. That's where he has to prove himself. That's all exactly. that matters at this point, no matter what he Absolutely. Does in the regular season. But I think that about does it, man. That sums up our conversation. Looking forward to what both of these teams are going to offer in the postseason. But – you know, ultimately, like we said, it's about the journey as well as the end result. And then, you know, in that theme here, you know, it's been a fun ride and it's been a fun conversation. So, Andrew, I want to thank you again for joining me today. Before you head out, I wanted to give you an opportunity to plug anything you wanted to plug, where people can find you on Twitter, projects, things like that. Just have a go at it, man.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So you can find my work on Twitter at Andrew_NBA. I do recaps for Brew Hoop, so you can just find my stuff, brewhoop.com. I don't recap their home games. I do recap most of their away games, though, so you can find all my stuff on brewhoop.com. And just want to thank you again, Aaron, for having me on. Had a great time talking basketball with you.
Same here. And listeners, I hope that goes for you as well. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to check out Business Casual's content, we are on social media, Instagram and Twitter at BCBasketball2. And then if you want to check us out on our website, that's going to be bcbasketball.info. Some updates are going on up there. New blog post coming soon. 2021 free agent list will be live in just a few days. So thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Enjoy this NBA season. Enjoy the rest of your day. And as usual, we'll be back next week with some more NBA analysis. So until then, take care, and we'll see you back on the pod real soon.